Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, I'm Lydia.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Adam. Let's talk Hoya.
Hello, everybody. 안녕.
Hola.
Hello.
So today we have a super special, exciting guest to share with you.
Sorry. Okay. That's it. That's all I wanted to do.
And today we're going to have a chat with Rachel Collette Conroy.
Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Welcome to the Let's Talk Hoya pod. Somebody famous, because you know, you're up in with the celebrities with three names: Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Jamie Lee Curtis, Rachel Collette Conroy. Boom, boom, boom.
I love that.
Oh, no. I think that's pushing it, but I'll take it. Thank you.
But you may
that's
have
all it
seen...
takes is having three names.
Yeah.
Oh, but you may have seen Rachel on Facebook groups, and we've talked about her quite a bit on the podcast, just because we just love she's out there sharing the information, doing amazing research, and she may have hopped on one of your posts and, you know, share some cool information with you. And so today, specifically, we're going to go over information on Hoya species, Hoya cultivar, and what all that means, and laying down that foundation.
Yeah, so we can have Rachel come on and answer more in-depth questions. But this is like an intro, a little bit about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're excited. So Rachel, tell our listeners a little bit just about you. Like, what is it that you do and who you are?
Oh, goodness. Well, I like Hoyas.
Wow, weird.
It's true. The rumors are true. I like Hoyas. But for me, the hobby is just as much, I think, gathering up information about them, like these little bits of lost history, as it is collecting the Hoyas themselves. I didn't really realize that at first, you know. There were a lot of years in there where I was just growing Hoyas, and especially Carnosa, and really excited that they were thriving in Miracle-Gro on my front porch. And there were spider mites thriving there with them, and I didn't even know it. And it was all going really swimmingly. And I didn't really think there was much else there until I went to repot that first giant Carnosa and went online and was like, I gotta Google how to repot this thing. And then I found like the old Cubits forum.
Oh,
and
the Cubits forums.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And this was in like 2014, 2012-ish. Wow. No, it was like 2014 because it was around when I got married. And I was down in my basement of my old house with this big Carnosa. And I was like, okay, this person, Carol, sounds like she knows what's up. I'm going to have to this thing here. I'm going to add some charcoal. I'm going to put some, like, you know, I'm going to put some, what is this, Wicked Bark in here. Mm. And I'm not going to do it with just Miracle-Gro anymore. And I think I'm going to be okay. And then I just like went down a rabbit hole of like, wow, like what's SP Kunming Kina? It's Oreogina now, by the way, guys. And, you know, like I was like fascinated by all these stories and history that they had to share. And I was also broke, so I did not buy any of these toys they're talking about. I just was like making lists and like reading stories. Mm. But I was really interested in who these people were and what their stories were. And so I started kind of gathering that up and learning about it. And so that is who I am. I'm just a person who likes to study those stories and histories and cultivars. And I work on Stemma Journal with Mark Randall, yes, who founded it in the mid-2000s. And he runs it today. And I grow hoyas.
See, I love that because it wasn't just like, it wasn't this... Well, especially that time frame, because it wasn't, I don't want to say mainstream, but you know, it wasn't like there was Instagram people like had Hoya Instagrams and all that. And what brought you into it was the fascinating stories of people and also the research. You know, you weren't just like, oh, I love this foliage. I'm like, I need this Hoya. You were just like, oh, I want to know all the research. I want to know like that's, I don't know, that's special. Yeah. And also like you can tell that you're that type of person.
That you're a real nerd. Yeah.
I mean, I definitely did that too. You know, there's definitely a time where I'm like, oh, I just, you know, that looks like a really cool Hoya to touch and I'm interested. But yeah, they, you know, not being able to afford those Hoyas yet and not really, I think that just made me really curious about what was there. You know, I still didn't know a lot about them then at that point in time. Like that was really more just my like, what is this world of Hoyas phase? You know, what is all of this? You know, I didn't really go deep diving then yet. You know, that was still later. I think a lot of us maybe found that the same way. With like a first search through like, you know, PS the Hoyan when it was available online was, you know, searching for a specific species and trying to find out more information about it. And then for me, as an insomniac, I just stayed up many, many late hours just reading all of those. And then I was like, okay, you know, I want to trace these back to the original publications and see if this is right and if it's accurate today. And
that's because, wild. You know, yeah, I can only imagine because, you know, that was almost a decade ago. And so just even
hit me with the 2014 was almost a decade ago. Wow.
But I almost wonder, you know, for you, how much of a shift that's felt like because, of course, Hoya have become so big. And with that, I feel like there's just more people looking for knowledge. And so there's more information like people are trying to find and interest in things like that. And so do you feel like, you know, just from when you were first starting your research to now, there's like a big difference in kind of like what you're finding or how you're approaching things even?
I think that now with Facebook available, it's all right there. So even with myself, you know, trying to keep track of all of the threads, it's almost a little bit impossible in some ways because like a Hoya will be discovered, or many Hoyas will be discovered, and then they are available for sale almost immediately. And they are given oftentimes descriptive trade names. And, you know, in addition to their species names, if they have a species name, if they've been identified as a species, and, you know, suddenly there's all of these Hoyas for sale. And, you know, I don't have to be involved in this, but I feel this sort of compulsion. And it's overwhelming to realize all of these Hoyas are for sale and they have all of these names attached to them. And if we don't keep track of them and of where they're coming from and if they're endangered or endemic to specific locations. And it's, I find it overwhelming and I find it.
I can only imagine. Yeah. Cause sometimes, you know, even looking into one type of Hoya and trying to find more information or pinpoint like exact locality information can become overwhelming. So just trying to think all of those Hoya and trying to like keep track of it. Oh my gosh. It has to feel like so much. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But I think that leads kind of into, you know, because when I was first starting into Hoya, I had no idea the difference between a species, a cultivar. You know, to me, a Hoya was a Hoya, right? And I feel like once you start going a little bit deeper into it, you start realizing, no, there's a distinct difference. There's a difference between a species, a difference between a cultivar. And especially for some of our newer Hoya head listeners, like I'd love to kind of break that down for them and what, you know, categorizes a Hoya as like a species or a cultivar. So should we just kind of chat about like species, like what makes a Hoya a species?
I mean, sure. You know, that's, it's funny. I was thinking about this, right? Like, and I have to go back and clarify before we jump to that, when I was answering your question about 2014 to now, like what I was doing in 2014 was Googling, and what I'm doing and what I'm doing now is research. You know what I mean? It's a different thing. So I want to clarify that difference. Like it's a different world. Like I, what I was doing then was like desperate, clueless, childish Googling. And what I'm doing now is like trying to research, but I'm still just learning as I go. Like so anyone you're saying the internet, would be no matter their level. Right?
You're saying the internet is not always right.
I mean that it would, you know, no matter how much I learn, I'm not trying to imply that I was doing some sort of serious research, no matter what I may have been querying back then.
Before we do the species chat, I would like to know, you know, at one point did you like really get into the like how did you, you know, like step your foot into that more hardcore Hoya research? And now, you know, you're in the works with some big, in my mind, big Hoya people like Mark Randall, and you know, like how did you kind of get into that world?
I don't really know.
Nerds know other nerds.
That just happens.
Yeah, they're like, this person's a nerd, which I love. So I'm not saying that in a derogatory term at all.
It takes one to know one. Yes,
I was about to say, you guys, we swear Hoya is the biggest thing in the world right now, but like three people are going to listen to us. But to us, it's everything. No. And I love loving things that like passionately, like to where it's like, oh my goodness, you're so famous. And it's like, okay, in this very small niche community you are. And I love that.
Yeah, to the point, our most recent recording that we haven't launched yet was literally, we just talked about Borneo because we're like, Hoya in Borneo. So let's talk about Borneo, you know, like just getting into that headspace now.
Mm-hmm. What was the original question that we just bounced around? This is Welcome to a Recording at Let's Talk Hoya.
Just, you know,
there were two. You tell me which one you want me to answer.
I think the first one is like, how did you kind of stepped away, not stepped away, but went into the more research end of it instead of the, you
Googling
know, the
and Google. Just, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that was just, I really just wanted to learn, right? So that went from I'm just, you know, asking a lot of questions. What goes from asking a lot of questions and they're just trying to learn about my plants and making sure that I have them tagged properly to, you know, wait a minute, I think that this publication's actually wrong. And so maybe we need to look into this, or and how does one go about doing that? And then, you know, just a learning about things on kind of a different level. And then, you know, when you start doing that, you then you end up in a kind of a different place than you were, you know, three steps ago.
And so
it just went from like, what does everyone think of my pretty Burtony to this is not a, that's not a Burtony, that's Hoya SPAF Burtonii. And no, it isn't. It's, you know, it just turns into an evolution of learning when, you know, over the years, and then you're in a different place. And
now you're part of Stemma.
It's a very earnest thing that is a labor of love of Mark's that, you know, he certainly has meant to put forward just, you know, good work and good writing and, you know, and hopefully that will get to continue for lots of years. But yeah, I'm very glad to get to be. I'm really glad that I have that opportunity.
Yeah. And as avid Hoya lovers, whenever Stemma comes out, like whoever, which one of us, you know, whichever one of us sees it first, we're like, there's a new article of Stemma, you know, and then we'll send the link and then read it. And we thoroughly enjoy it and love all of the awesome work that, you know, all of you guys at Stemma are putting together for us Hoya lovers. So we truly appreciate and enjoy it.
I'm so glad. Please definitely feel free to always give us suggestions and ideas and come discuss the articles. And, you know, we always love ideas. We've got some really, I'm very excited about the content we have coming up for this issue that is really well underway. Yes, particularly cool article. Several, but one that has, I think, long awaited by the community. Ooh. So that's the biggest hint I'll give there.
Okay, we'll be waiting for it. And then looking forward to being able to share that with our listeners, too.
So now back to the second question that we talked about was, let's talk about what makes a Hoya a species. Well, not really a species,
But what is a Hoya species?
With species, it's going to be, it's a group, it's a taxonomic grouping. They're going to be similar. They're going to be visually similar. It's not a single clone. It's never going to be a single clone. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, okay, well, my Callistophylla looks different than yours, so they must be different species. Some would argue that a species should just be one particular phenotype, you know, but it's going to be a lot of different phenotypes within a species. It's the basic group, the basic grouping.
So basically the Hoya that hasn't been hybridized with another Hoya, like it's just...
Yes, it's one basic... plant. Group in found in nature. Yes.
And then when we move into saying a cultivar.
So a cultivar is a selected plant. So that means like if you found a mutation in nature or a mutation in your nursery, or you hybridized two separate species, or you grafted a species onto another part of a plant and created something unique. I should have the code open in front of me for more examples. Or had a, you know, unique set of all white blooming seedlings from an otherwise blue blooming plant, then these could qualify as seedlings. And you can read, because I am paraphrasing here for you. You can read the International Code of Nomenclature for cultivated plants. Mm-hmm. It is found online free and can be translated to all languages.
And I think you've posted that on Facebook before.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's where my curiosity for really understanding like cultivar species and what all of that means really came from was actually from, I think I actually have it saved on Facebook, but I read that. And at that point, it really hit me like, oh my gosh, you know, this is a really huge thing. And that really piqued my interest in understanding exactly what the distinction is and how that affects me, you know, as a collector and someone now, you know, who sells plants to other people and being able to share that information. So I want to thank you for sharing that.
Oh, goodness. I'm so glad that it piqued your interest. I'm happy to have put it out there. And I'm glad they put it out there for us. And that it's something that, that they are, you know, that is to be shared freely and translated freely. Mm-hmm. It can be a little bit, you know, cumbersome. I've read through it at least 30 times now, and wow. I need to read through it a lot more.
Dang.
I've read through it a few times, and still there are parts in there where I'm like, I don't really know what that fully means, but
right.
One day it may hit me and I will fully understand.
That's how codes are. They're supposed to be very clear, and sometimes that can be cumbersome.
Yeah. So if going back to like the cultivar thing, so if I had a plant in my collection, I don't have a nursery, but if I had a plant in my collection that was displaying some very unique characteristics, how does that then become a cultivar? Do you have to propagate it, show that it can carry out that trait, or and what's that process like? And then it has to be published somewhere, I'm assuming.
Yes. So the publication is a really important part. So the idea with a cultivar is that, you know, it's selected, right? You select this mutation and then it shows stability and consistency and that it is unique from others. So it shouldn't just be, I have found this mutation and it's different from what I already had and it's cool, but also maybe there's 150 others similar to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't propagate anything cool we find. I mean, by all means, like if you find it, propagate cool stuff you find and grow it out and enjoy it because it's pretty and it's fun to do. I do it all the time. I have so many cool silvery carnosas and, you know, it's who wouldn't?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to name them because it's redundant and it would not make sense. They're already out there and they're not unique enough.
Right.
But if you do find something that is unique and is worth, you know, maybe selecting to see if it would fall under being a unique, consistent mutation, then you can select it and grow it out and see if it continues. Mm. And then over time, you can also follow the process for, you know, choosing a name that could be accepted. There's a process for choosing the correct name as well. And then it needs to be properly published. And of course, there's, you know, qualifications for how to publish the name and the Hoya itself with the description or diagnosis and in the right kind of publication and you know, the right kind of circulation, and then have a cultivar out there.
Yeah.
Usually it's nurseries that are doing this, larger nurseries, because they have big scale, so they have lots of mutations show up. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw a lot of that in like the heyday of like cobia, and we see a lot of it coming out of China and Indonesia, even from the wild. which is okay. Mm-hmm. A cultivar can be, you know, even though I had misconceptions about this in the past, cultivar can absolutely be selected from the wild, but it does need to be published. It doesn't mean that the ones that have been named will not be valid, but they don't have taxonomic standing until they are published. Mm-hmm. So they will need to be published.
And I'm glad that you clarified that, because I had that misunderstanding too initially, was that if a Hoya was wild found, that it wasn't a cultivar. Mm-hmm. But now we're saying if it's unique enough and it can stand that, what am I looking for? That
the standard?
Then it can be classified as a cultivar.
So what's an example of that?
Yeah, like a mutation, like something like Nicholsonia New Guinea ghost, where it is specifically like an individual seedling of Nicholsonia that is a one-off seedling found on a tree that falls under an example from the International Code of Nomenclature from cultivated plants, as opposed to something like, you know, like Herman's really gorgeous Verticillata MA07, where that is an exceptional, and you know, it's, you know, where it's numbered and it should be numbered, but then he also has several other numbered Verticillata with a dark margin that if you would probably not want to publish those as a cultivar, because you could potentially mix them up if you didn't have them numbered.
And so that really makes me think, because, you know, it's not just you say, oh, this Hoya is different, we're going to make it a cultivar. I mean, there's a very distinguished process that it has to go through to be named that. And so now that kind of carries into, you know, all of these Hoya are in market and they're given all of these names and they're not published. Yeah. And so, you know, what are kind of your thoughts on that? Opposed to something, you know, being like a cultivar epithet, to just all these trade names that are out there that didn't go through the proper procedure, and they're widely being used and being circulated in the mainstream market.
You know, I'm not really in a position to judge so much as to hopefully help. I would like to, in general, like, I'd love to see the whole market just kind of take a breath and slow down a little bit, mostly for the sake of the forests. I'd love to see everyone watch, like, Fraser Cook's most recent video. And like everyone learn about, you know, just where their plants are coming from, and just know every time they buy a plant, you know, as much as they can, as far back as possible. I can pretty much name with every plant in my collection where it was extracted. You know, pretty close, or which, you know, which hunter it came from.
Wow.
And I am not judging when someone cannot, because that is not the name of the game. You know, it hasn't been for a long time.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to do that. And I think we should all be able to do that within reason, to know, did they get this from that nursery? Did they get it from, you know, this hunter? Was it grown out before it was sold? And I think that's important. And if we can't do that and talk about it and think about it, then we probably really should think about how many plants we're collecting. You know, as far as the names on the Lacanosa, I have a friend, you know, I was venting about it, and I have a friend that is very, very smart, and she said, you know what, names gives us information, and when you've got those names there, you can trace them back to something, so, you know, where I would have rather seen location and numbers, names are, at least in my opinion, you know, they're second best, right? She likes names better. She's very, very intelligent person, probably smarter than me. So I don't
think that she's wrong. I don't think that I'm right. I wouldn't mind if I would like to see where it all falls in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, because we were chatting before and you're telling me your extensive Hoya collection. And so I'm sure tracking all of that information down and where everything came from, like, I can only imagine the amount of work that went into that. Do you keep like a Excel spreadsheet or something like that to keep track of everything? Or what's your method?
So I keep a handwritten notebook and I keep this really awful proprietary app called AnyList, which don't do it because it used to import into Excel.
Yeah, I have
and that was
app.
Why I used it. It's terrible. Yeah. It no longer imports into Excel.
Oh, no.
See? So don't do it. so now I'm having to update everything back into Google Docs, which is, you know, the superior way to do it.
Oh, man.
The only reason I used AnyList was because things came in and out so quickly, and I wanted to be able to have a photo attached very simply, and AnyList allows you to add a photo and I could update it very easily, and it was alphabetized and very smooth. And just don't do it. This is not an advertisement for AnyList.
Not sponsored.
Yeah.
See, I tried to do that. I tried to like keep a list of the Hoyas in my collection and kind of where they came from. Also, like when I got them, because I wanted to prove that I can keep things alive. So I did the handwritten notebook. I think I got to 50 and then I stopped because like hand cramp. And then I actually downloaded that, what is it, Planta app?
Mm-hmm.
You can take a picture of your Hoya and you put in all of that information. I think I did 3 and then I was like, okay, too much work. Can't do that. And then I started the Excel sheet. I think I got to like 10 and then I stopped. So any tips and tricks on how to keep that? But it sounds like that handwritten process is probably going to be what sticks the most, because I did get 50 on that list.
The problem with handwritten is, you know, you can't share it. So it's very nice for an actual archive. I mean, I really love, by handwritten notebook, I mean, you know, 15 of them. But you can't share them quickly. I really like having that box that has like all of those with the hard copies of notes that people have sent with the Hoyas and
what
photos
would,
and
what
things
would a
like
modern
that. So it's
day
nice to have.
Scribe be? Because back in the day you hired a scribe to write down your thoughts, but now we need a scribe to type. I'll be your scribe. Just send me your notebooks and I'll type them up.
That sounds amazing.
But I did want to ask, like, what, just in case folks don't know, because I know that not everyone comes with the same experience, but what would be like an example of a Hoya with a trade name that's not actually a published cultivar, but people treat it as one, like a common one?
Oh, you know,
any of my Lacanosa?
It is a cultivar, but it has a trade name.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is what you mean, but Hoya Carnosa Crimson Princess, so the cultivar is Hoya Carnosa rubra.
Okay.
But it's called Crimson Princess very commonly. Mm-hmm. And this happens with a lot of Cobia's cultivars. And I think it's probably just because the trade name was used so widely and he had it like on his tags, and then the nurseries and other nurseries used it on tags as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a trade name is not always just a name that is used to market a Hoya before it's published. It's also a name that is used to market an already published Hoya specifically for marketing purposes. And in this case, Hoya Carnosa rubra, it was a published and patented radiation-induced cultivar. Very cool one that, you know, a lot of us grow.
I didn't know that.
I told Lydia.
Yeah, you can look it up in the Mutant Variety Database.
Ooh, Mutant Variety Database.
Okay.
One X-Men of our recent, I don't know if it published. It might have.
No, not yet.
But I talked about this. I was like, I wonder what we could do to like cause a mutation. And I was like, I'm going to take a Hoya cutting with me to the dentist when they do the x-ray. I'm just going to have it in my mouth and be like, or I'm going to break my arm and just shove a little Hoya cutting under there and zap it with some radiation.
So that's been done.
No one knows the exact methods that that Cobia used, and it was rumored that
a used Hummel X-ray machine. No, just kidding. Sorry.
Yeah, Van Ralta wrote the article that is linked. That is the linked source in the Mutant Variety Database. Is attested to Cobia's mutant varieties, but and I'm using the word varieties here. They're cultivars, but when you have a legal variety is equivalent to a cultivar. So like a variety is a taxonomic rank that is below subspecies, but when you register a legal variety, it's like when you go through the patent process with a cultivar. So it's just, in this case, it's equivalent. And you can read about that in the International Code of Nomenclature for Cultivated Plants as well.
Okay, so there's a hierarchy. There's species, subspecies, legal variety, variety. Is that kind of how it goes?
No, variety is it's in there. It's just, in this case, it's like seeing that this usually, like a cultivar is like the lowest little taxonomic rank. And in this case, a variety, these are just like a cultivar that is legally also called a variety.
Gotcha.
Okay. That sounds a little bit convoluted, and I apologize, all of you listeners. You are welcome to PM me with questions in this case. I promise it's less crazy than it sounds. It's really just means that they're cultivars, but they have the legal term variety. Gotcha. It just means that they have a patent, really.
That's one thing I do want to say. You are always so kind, and we've mentioned that on the pod too. You have so much patience with people, especially when they ask questions. I was like, literally, you could have found that on your own, but whatever. But you're so kind in offering your knowledge to everyone. Yeah. We will have your stuff linked below. Also, anything we talk about will be in linked below and in the show notes, so you guys can find that, listeners.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Anyway, back on track, we talked about cultivar epithets versus trade names. So like what a trade name, would we say like Lacunosa Silver Mint Coin? That's not even a trade name. That's just like a marketing name, right?
I don't know exactly. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I don't know if what we have there is a selected mutant from the forest. I haven't traced that all the way back yet. I don't know if it appeared in a nursery. I've reached out, to some people. So I'm not gonna, that's kind of in the middle of research right here. Okay. For me is, but with some of these, what it looks like, there's quite a few, in the dozens, of named silver Lacunosa mutations, or maybe some that are the same but have multiple names. Yeah. So if it's the same with multiple names, then whichever one was named first, would be the first name, and the next one would be a trade name. But once published, So anyhow, something if it's a legitimate cultivar, then it's okay to have a name on the market before it's published. It just doesn't really have taxonomic standing until it has been published. But it has some amount of weight if it's been out there long enough. That could matter. There's been some precedents where there's been like a court case, and then a name that had been out there for a really long time on the market took standing over one that only had like one cultivar in existence and tried to publish but this cult fur had been out a really long time but hadn't published. So it's, anyhow,
you know,
they'll be sorted and treat them, you know, keep your labels, treat them as if they are cultivars. If you learn anything about them, please feel free to message me. Mm-hmm. They're all beautiful. They're all, you know, worthy of growing. And I hope to learn more about them in the future. But Hoya, you know, right now, you know, as far as I know, they're Hoya lacanosa, and the rest of the names, you know, until they're published, how are we to know what they are?
That's my real question.
That's how we find out what a name is because it's been published someplace.
Sidebar, but what I need in my life is a TV show or a YouTube series where you're the Judge Judy of the Hoya naming, and we have two people bring their evidence, and you're going to decide
what the final name is.
Wouldn't that be fun?
What would we name the show?
I don't know. But it has to have Rachel Collette Conroy. Anyway. So back to our cultivar chat. Yeah. What are some like problematic practices that have kind of become widespread as, and I don't mean problematic as in like, I don't know how we mean problematic, but stuff that like shouldn't
more like
be
that's like causing more confusion.
Yeah.
Is what I think, you know,
not that people are intentionally trying to be
right
wrong or, but like, what are some widespread ones that you see a lot that we can just shine a little light on?
Sure. I'll circle back to the, cause I'm not sure if I like really, answer, because I think that's kind of the answer is the Rubra Crimson Queen situation. Okay. And I'm not sure if I actually answered that very well. So that I see kind of every day, and I probably over answer that. So I'm going to like put that in an article someplace so that I don't just post it in Facebook comments all over the place, but I'm going to say it right here too. So this is just a very simple thing about one cultivar, but it also relates. It's the same thing with his tricolor, which is the outer variegated. So Barnell Cobia's inner variegated cultivar is just one of many inner variegated cultivars on the market. And that is Hoya carnosa rubra. It's the one we just spoke about a minute ago. Mm-hmm. And its correct name is rubra. A cultivar can only have one accepted name. And in it's called Crimson Queen, as if that was the cultivar name, pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. But that is only the trade name. And a trade name is written, if at all, in all caps or in a differently stylized way so that you can tell that's the trade name. So if we see it, we regularly see it kind of written as the cultivar name or, you know, maybe just kind of written. Then the other one is, of course, Crimson Queen, and that's tricolor. And I think what has happened over the years is that a lot, and I've contributed to this before, I realized there were so many other named inner and outer variegated carnosa cultivars, mm-hmm. is that people just lumped them all together into one and call Guilty. All inner. Yeah. Yeah, right, but they're different, of course. Get it? Yeah, Ben Guilty. Call them all one, and then they use those as the names, and mm. neither of those are their cultivar names, and neither of those should be written as cultivar names. Mm. So I'm looking forward to clarifying that.
Yes,
further.
Because that is the there. One thing that I see all the time when I join that Hoya identification group, which is why I called you a saint, because... Mm. I constantly Aww. See your response in there to the inner and outer variegated carnosa. And I honestly didn't know this until I saw your response, ignorant on my part, that not all inner variegated are a rubra and not all outer variegated are a tricolor. Like, I just did not get that until I saw your response. But then I'm like sitting here thinking, do you have a spreadsheet full of responses that you just copy and paste? Because you do give the information and it's a lot. of information, a lot of good information. But then I'm sitting here like, I'm like, I wonder what she does. It like, she's like, okay, well, I got to go to this spreadsheet, copy cell A1 over because they asked this question.
No, I should though.
You should. Girl, we got to work smarter, not harder.
Make a spreadsheet of just all the responses she's given to all different types of Hoya.
Yes.
And then it could become like a book, I bet.
It definitely could.
No, it's fine. I'd like to just get it out maybe in an article someplace and make sure it's all, that's why I want to just make sure I have all of this information always correct and from all of the right, accurate sources reviewed and put it out where it can be seen instead of, you know, I always enjoy helping people that are new learners like I have been lots of times and will be many times again. That I always enjoy that, and that's why I keep coming back, you know, because I relate to it so hard. But it's hard to do that. It's kind of more just my stress relief, you know, when I'm like, oh, I'm making my kids lunch or I'm like blow drying my hair. So I'm going to like for 5 minutes check in and make sure that there's not something going on that requires making sure that I need to delete a comment here or there and or hit mute somewhere. And that's where I'll check in on the groups. And then I end up instead like, I'm explaining this again. I don't know why it's very often the same things that end up kind of near to my heart because they're the things that I'm kind of studying and I have spent time on. And then I will like move away to another area for like 6 months where I'm like, oh, this is the thing I'm working on. And it's sort of self-centered, you know, lacanosa for 6 months and Kentiana for 6 months. And so yeah, I don't know what it'll be next year. But I hope I'll be patient then too, and I hope it'll just get published and reviewed and not just be in comments, and that it will be helpful.
Yeah.
And not wrong.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But one thing that I'm really excited to talk to you about, I mean, everything that we've talked about so far, but particularly writing Hoya names. Because Adam and I have a shop and I try to, you know, keep up with all the names and make sure I'm writing things correctly. Because when I first started collecting, I didn't know that there was a difference in a capitalized S to a lowercase S. And now all of those things are very, very significant. And so I try to be mindful of that, but I still feel like I'm learning and I still get things wrong. But I want to chat with you about, you know, the importance of when we write out Hoya names, like how every letter or single quotations makes a difference.
Sure. I love that you are a shop. You both are a shop that cares and it matters. And I think that there are more out there now who do. I've noticed that. I think that there are more out there that really immediately make changes or pull inventory if they have a questionable ID. Yeah. And I get a lot of messages too about that. Like, hey, I don't think this is right. Can you check this? Like, please don't ask me. I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. I'm happy to check those things.
Okay, so but, I'm always thankful when I send you a message because sometimes I'm like, okay, Adam, like, what do you think about this one? How do you think we should write it? And we're like, I don't know. I think this is the way. And then we just tell each other, maybe we should ask Rachel.
Rachel Clay Conroy to the rescue.
No, you can. There are a few out there that I have been very glad to have checked. But I don't want to be anyone's only stop. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'm glad that we all take responsibility together to do our best.
Absolutely. So, but should we start?
Well,
with?
I know you know the basics, but I'm happy to share them here.
Yes.
That we write the genus in a capital
letters. Mm-hmm. And the species is lowercase and the genus and species are italicized. But I know that we're not all always doing that on Facebook because mobile is a joke and we can't. So that's very difficult to do. And if you're not doing it on your tags, I'm not judging you. And then we use single quotation marks for our cultivars. And then we do trade names in capital letters or otherwise stylized. So that could mean like capital letters and italicized. Mm-hmm. And you could throw in a little TM if it's trademarked. And you can see examples of that. Like there are different registries out there that have big lists of trademarked trade names or not trademarked trade names. And you can see it with COBIAs with how those are written as well.
Do you think it's appropriate to put trade names in parentheses?
A trade name doesn't have to be on there really at all. But it's good to have, if especially if it was purchased that way, because in a lot of cases, it's also the common name.
Right.
And it kind of, you know, it's nicely linked to the plant. It's part of its heritage. So unless there's some doubt that it really belongs with that plant, then I like to have them on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it in capitals. The only reason I don't like doing it in capitals is on Facebook, because there's so little information about trade names right now and so little understanding that everyone thinks I'm yelling at them. I'm like, Crimson Queen! It's Crimson Queen, guys!
Right.
Like, I'm not yelling. I'm not yelling at you. This is just how you write these. So that's how it should be done. I think what you mean is questionable, unpublished, you know, like you've received something and you don't really know what it is what you're talking about. So a really nice way to meet, if you just aren't sure what something is, I keep the name as it is, or I just write received as, and I keep, gotcha. And I do a just received as, and I don't consider that it's a trade name. I just, it's a questionable ID received as.
Gotcha. Just information that people can have so that they can trace back that Hoya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not really making any sort of a decision about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just putting that information there.
So for...
But I'm also not in the difficult position of passing it forward. I'm just hanging on to it, and I've received it this way, and I'm assessing it, and I'm tracing it back.
Right.
Hola, Hoya friends. So we launched our Patreon, aka Peduncle Pals. It's been a joy connecting more with all of you, chatting in our Facebook group, and sharing more behind the scenes through our exclusive Patreon episodes every month. We're blown away by your support, and we're so grateful for every one of you that is joining us on this club. You can subscribe through our Patreon link through our Instagram bio, episode descriptions, or show notes. See you there.
Looking to elevate your gardening game this season? Well, look no further than Coast of Maine, your go-to source for premium organic soils for over 28 years. Organic approved and sourced from oceans and farms, their full range of garden and lawn products are designed to restore roots to the natural world.
So picture this, you're struggling with lackluster soil just like I did last year, and your garden plans just aren't thriving. And that was until we discovered Coast of Maine. Their products infuse my soil with the healthy microbes and nutrients it was craving, resulting in vibrant outdoor plants that practically thanked me for the upgrade.
Omri listed and crafted from natural ingredients like lobster shells and fish bones, their products not only nourish your plants, but also your peace of mind.
Are you ready to take your garden to the next level? Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. That's why their products are carried by local retail partners who provide advice and insight, not just found in big box stores.
And Coast of Maine knows, from beginning to expert, anyone who takes a hand to the land has something to offer the growing community of gardeners everywhere.
Their products make organic gardening simple and approachable for everyone.
Let's get growing together.
Visit coastofmaine.com today. That's coastofmaine with an E.com. For a Hoya that you may have purchased, like I've done this before, but something that has a lot of splash, you know, that is a physical characteristic that's definitely not part of the name of that Hoya, no matter, you know, how someone bought that, correct? So how would that be written? Is that with parentheses, physical characteristics?
Like the descriptor?
I mean, I guess it depends, you know, usually I guess I feel like that was a loaded question. I'm going to be honest. I heard you say no matter how someone bought that, correct, with a kind of a question mark behind it. So,
Well, I didn't mean for it to be a loaded question, but you know.
It's okay. Yeah. No, I know. But I'm going to go ahead and throw out there that, you know, I'm in the process of going through all cultivar names that have been published to the best of my ability. And I do not know yet, ones are.
I'm so glad you're doing it.
Yeah.
That's so much work.
So it's going to take a little more time before we know, you know, which ones are accepted names and which ones, that means which was the first name, you know, for a specific cultivar. So long story short, you know, sometimes there's a Hoya that has the name that has splash in it, but it's not the case that splash is never part of a cultivar name. Okay. I think that there's some confusion there because it can be part of a cultivar name, but we don't necessarily know which ones yet. And I do think it gets thrown around as description so much that, you know, that it's going to be a little confusing to make sure that yours was properly labeled.
Yeah.
In order to know that you have a properly labeled cultivar, it depends on where it comes from. And you might just have a species that has been called splash, in which case, yeah, I just would call it by the species name, full stop.
Full stop.
Okay. But if it's a cultivar, then you call it by the cultivar name.
I feel like this entire episode has just been like the more you know star is just like floating over my head every time you say something. I'm like, huh, the more you know.
I do have a question about, one of the things that we've been doing is there's Hoya that have been synonymized. And so take, for instance, you know, Hoya Sarawak is now Verticillata. Is it appropriate to then put the former name in parentheses just for like tracking purposes of, oh, this used to be a Sarawak, but now it's, you know, officially a Verticillata? What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. So Sarawak is, well, in that case, that's a location. So you've got lots of, that one wouldn't, it's a good example to use because anytime you've got a location, that's not an old name. It's location information you can add. So if you're growing a clone that used to be SP Sarawak and is now a Verticillata, and there's also a very popular formerly known as SP Sarawak that is Latifolia, then it's perfectly fine to send that out as, you know, to also add, you know, that it's the one from that location. Okay. There's lots of Verticillata from that region and lots of Latifolia from that region, as well as lots of other Hoyas from that region. So that's, I think, the only other thing to keep in mind. But there's no reason to not share that it came from there. I think that that's cool to know. It's even more fun to know, like, exactly where, if you happen to know, you know, the nursery or the person who found it, and you can get even more information. Or if you've got a, if it's the Sarawak that has the GPS number, if it's that Verticillata, that's cool. If you're talking about a specific synonymization, an old species name, then yeah, a lot of us really do enjoy, you know, knowing it's a no longer used name, but a lot of people enjoy having that history. So there's nothing wrong with saying what it formerly was, But some of these, you know, they were just misidentifications as well. So there's just misunderstanding on the market as well.
So one thing, I this just keeps like opening up more and more questions for me. But I did have a situation once where someone told me that Hoya Elliptica, I kind of talked to Fraser about this a little bit because he saw like a bunch of Elliptica when he was on his travels recently. And Fraser is at Botanical Otter on Instagram. Anyway, well, for the listeners, I know you know him.
Everyone should follow him.
Yes, please. You should. I was talking about the Elliptica and I was like, look, like I have three different Ellipticas that look all vastly different, but I have only called them Elliptica because that's what I got them at as. It wasn't like I have, you know, no location information. And then someone kind of one time slid into my DMs. It was like, that's an Elliptica tie form. And I was like, well, no, cause whoever I got it from, I didn't know it, if it came from Thailand or not. So is that something you kind of agree with? You can't really see the physical characteristics of, you know, all of the plants and be like, oh, this one came from Thailand. Like that information you should only pass along if you know for certain that that's where it came from. I don't know if that's the best way to ask that question.
Yeah, no, you're asking a very good question. I don't ever add numbers or locations to plants that didn't come with them.
Okay.
I will identify, you know, as well as I can using the parts that are in front of me, right? As much as I can, but that's as far as I'll go. I use tracing back, you know, I'll trace all the way back as far as I can, asking person to person. Okay, well, can I please ask who you got it from? It's for research purposes. I'm not trying to buy more, things like that. And I will, you know, take all the parts and, you know, compare it. There's great websites on there where you can compare the pollen area and every floral part and all of the leaves and make some really great IDs. So really trying to add a location is usually not necessary, but you can find okay, well, in reality that only certain areas have occurrences of Hoyas that appear like this, or, you know, it's very, very unlikely that this came from any place other than this part of Indonesia, or there's no way that this is from outside of the Philippines. It's like, I'm not going to like add a number or say this is for sure from Thailand, but I'll make those kinds of notes where I'm like, this is very, very likely from here, but I'm not going to like make it part of the ID.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I just want to, for our listeners and also for myself, sum up kind of how these names should be written. And so correct me if I'm wrong at any point. So for species, we would be writing our Hoya, if possible, italicized, but Hoya, SP, which stands for species, lowercase, and the Hoya name, like Lacunosa. Is it always important to include the SP to denote that it's a species, or should the, okay.
Oh, no, I meant like that. So that's just if it's unidentified. You just use the SP if you have an unidentified.
I see.
That was like, you know, if you had like, I was using that example for like SP, Sarawak, because it's a location.
I see. So then if it's an identified species, it would just be Hoya and then in lowercase and the Hoya name. Okay. And then for a cultivar, it would be Hoya and then single quotation and that Hoya name. I've been told it can either be the single quotation or you can write Hoya CV and then the Hoya name. Is that correct?
So we no longer use CV. That was changed. I have to check the code for the exact year. I think it was the 1996 update, but it's commonly still seen.
That was a long time ago.
It could have been 2004. Mm-hmm. That was the other more recent update, but I think it was 96. but it's no longer used. You know, it's still seen a lot. And it's funny because it's seen like with really specific ones, you know, from like particular, like in, like you'll see it with like CV Bent or, you know, CV Blessing. Like there's very particular names that you see it in combination with.
Yes.
Almost like it's part of only that Hoya's name or something. And I'm, you know, it's funny, but it's just the single quotes. But we know that anytime you see the CV, it means that it's a cultivar. We just no longer use the, we no longer use that.
Learn something new every day. I had no idea. So that it'd be single quotations and then the first letter of that Hoya name would be capitalized, correct?
Yeah, the first letter of each word in the name. Cultivar name. Yes. So if it was like, if it was, you know, like Lydia's Amazing Hoya, each of those would be capitalized.
Okay. Okay.
But it can't have Hoya in it. You cannot use Hoya. You cannot use the genus name. So retract that as a potential.
It'll
name.
Just be Lydia's Amazing.
Yes, Lydia's Amazing. Yes, and then we have to make sure that it doesn't overblow the possible traits of the Hoya. Just all of these little rules, but I'm sure it actually would be amazing, so that's fine.
And then trade names, we would put in all caps, correct?
Yes, all caps is the typical way to see those.
Trade names. And then it's okay to put descriptors, locality information, or formally known names into parentheses.
Yeah, and you know, the way that I usually do that is like in like a written description with a listing or like before the genus name altogether, like myself, you know, I'll put... just because I'm a big fan of, if I'm going to be in a situation where I don't feel like I need to write the author of the species, which I should do more often because we have situations like Hoya macrophylla white and Hoya macrophylla bloom, then I just don't want to like have confusion by having things after the species name. So it's okay to have something in parentheses back there. You know, it's we're talking about the hobby trade. You know, the Hoya police are not coming after you. As far as I know, I haven't heard anything. It's like, it's not pinging on my radar at least. But in general, I will write splashy Hoya something. I don't write splashy, but you know, like variegated Hoya carnosa, you know, but like I'll put my description first.
Yeah, that makes so much sense because you don't want it confused as part of the name. And if you were to put it first, then definitely people aren't going to be like, oh, that's part of that Hoya name. So that totally makes sense.
Yeah. That's kind of my goal with that. Okay. With a location, it's a little trickier because there's not a cute way to do that. But I'll put so that I'm more likely to put Hoya Engleriana from Vietnam. But I'm still not always going to stick in the author.
Okay. And then unidentified species, we put the SP. So Hoya SP and then whatever that unidentified species name is, and that remains lowercase, correct?
Well, if it's an unidentified species, it's usually a location. So the location is usually capitalized.
Okay.
But it depends, you know, on what you're using. There's, a couple of different ways to refer to an unidentified species.
Okay. And I know this can be difficult for our listeners to like visualize in your mind. And so we will be sure to write it out for you in our show notes so you can see it, but definitely super helpful for me. I have a lot of listings to go and update here this weekend. But did we miss any, or are those the bulk of the ones that we usually see? I think that's the bulk of them.
Yeah, I think that's most of them.
Well, as we kind of close out this conversation, we still, you know, just want our listeners to know a little bit more about you. So at the end of the episode, we're going to do some just fun lightning questions to ask about some Hoya in your collection. But we'd like to know, you know, what's kind of next for you and any future plans or hopes for you in the future, Rachel?
Oh, goodness. I'm going to be... I've got lots of hopes and plans in the future. I'm going to be focused on Stemma Journal quite a lot. That's my main Hoya goal, is supporting our work and the things that we're doing that are auxiliary to that in the next year. I do have some big projects that are tied in, but separate that I will look forward to sharing with you guys at a future date.
Oh,
yeah. But I will probably leave it at that and leave you hanging a little bit.
Well, I for one just want to say I'm excited for anything that you're currently working on, because you can tell just even from this short time that we've had this conversation, but I could tell just in your past writing how much this is, how much you care about this and how close this is to your heart, and to put out good and right information. So thank you for all that.
Yeah, for sure.
From everyone in this community.
Yes.
Thank you for tolerating this very long, my long-windedness and being a little bit dry for this particular format. You're very patient. It's hard for me to do this in a situation where I can't, you know, be edited, and yeah, so I appreciate it, because this is not what I normally do. I want to go back and make sure that everything is sourced and corrected, and so I want to say that for everyone that this is not my normal MO, so I will go back and correct myself in the comments.
we love though that you're willing to step outside of that comfort zone, just to bring the Hoya information at a different, in an audio format for people. You know, we have a lot of listeners who have long drives, and, you know, they can't, you know, read a book as they drive. So they listen and they love learning, and stepping outside of your comfort zone really helps us be able to do that.
I mean, I'm sure that somebody listening to this episode was watering their inner variegated Hoya carnosa, and then they just looked at it and was like, you're not who I thought you were anymore.
Yeah.
Rubra. Maybe or maybe not.
It we might not know. Be Rubra.
Yeah, that's right.
We
that's
don't
right.
know.
Hello, you.
How
you
was
are.
It labeled? Yes. How was that plant labeled when they
you
received it?
Unidentified Hoya.
Well, if it came from a big box store, hello, houseplant.
Yeah. Depends on which box store.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, God. Okay, well, before we wrap things up, should we head into our lightning question round? I wish I had a sound
effect. Oh, we forgot about those.
Lightning question. Good, because we want it to be
a surprise.
It's like word association. We say a word and you, bam, you give us an answer.
That's dangerous.
I think these are fun, and I hope our audience likes them too. But this is just going to be where we ask like a certain question, and Rachel Collette Conroy is going to give us an answer as fast as you can. Don't stress about it. but the first one is, what is your current pride and joy, Hoya-wise? These are about Hoya in your collection. I know your child is your pride and joy.
It's an outer variegated Hoya carnosa.
Oh.
I don't know its exact name yet. I'm tracing it back. Ooh. It's gorgeous.
Is it?
It's stunning. I'll show you all a picture.
Are these, would you be okay with us also posting these to Instagram stories with pictures?
Sure. I didn't grow it myself. I found it. A friend of mine found it. Just love really beautiful.
Oh,
it's a really
I'm
beautiful one.
To see
oh,
it.
Me too.
All right. So what is your most picky or finicky Hoya in your collection right now?
Oh, I don't know. It's probably in my compost pit.
Girl, I feel that.
Most finicky.
I just purchased my third Chewy Oreum.
Okay.
Oh. So let's go with that.
Yeah.
The first two were decimated by flat mite.
Oh gosh, no.
Those sons of bitches.
Yes. The first one arrived with them, and the second one arrived with them. No. Or got them from something in my collection while in quarantine. I'm not sure. But yeah. when they have them in quarantine, I tend to blame it on arrival.
Yeah. For sure.
But I
that's fair.
I'm not under the impression that they're like not extant in my collection.
Yeah.
Okay. So side note here, I have been thinking about this a lot lately and in my journey on collecting Hoya and thinking like all of these certain Hoya that I thought were so difficult that maybe I need to try again because it could have just had flat mites or broad mites or something that I couldn't see with my eyeballs.
Yeah. The very first one, it actually might have been broad mites. I can't remember because it was like years ago.
Yeah.
So I just don't remember. And I don't remember if I tell the difference then. I just remember seeing, like I looked through the scope. It was years ago, you know, and it was like the cheap scope back then, like the little one that I got off of like Kelly's like website.
Yeah. Yes.
And and I was trying to zoom in and I just remember seeing that thing chomping away after looking for like an hour for something. And it was just like going at it. And I was like, oh, that's why you won't grow. I was so angry. And it was like gifted by a friend. And then like my Anarchy right next to it was decimated, and they had gotten into my main collection, and I was just so mad.
Yeah, it's I mean, literally everyone those last few years.
Hashtag same.
This was like too long ago. Yes. Still.
Okay. There are times of charm.
Yeah, try her again.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fine. We raised awareness.
Yes, that's right. The next lightning question. You have to leave your house immediately. You can only grab one Hoya to take with you out of your collection. Which one do you go for?
Okay. So I thought about this. I know that's not fair for a lightning question.
No, that's okay. I don't need to think too.
I did. I like re-listened to April's and it was like, and I think about this for years. I've always thought about what Hoya I would grab for my collection. And it has always been, but it's no longer. It's always been, so I'm cheating. I know, guys, I'm cheating. It's always been my heirloom Carnosa that was my first ever Carnosa.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it was my dad's, and, like, he's, you know, it was my first one I ever started. And my dad and my mom started it in, like, the 70s. And, like, he had it when they met. And then, like, she gave it to me when, you know, I was, like, younger. And then, anyways, like, blah, blah, blah. But she still has, like, the big mother plant and a daughter from it. And I know that if anything ever happens, I could start it again and it would be the same clone. And now I feel this like big responsibility for all of these like really endangered and, you know, rare Hoyas that are in my collection. So So I think it would be like, I don't know the exact one, but it would be like whichever one is closest to my hand the second that I was running out, and like maybe as many as possible. Yeah. I know. It's probably not even like necessarily that rare, but if it was like the pubic helix from Polillo Island that George Mendoza collected and sent to Ted Green, that then Dorothy sent to me as a little cutting, and it's like just really cool and gets this amazing flower, and I never see it. It's got round leaves like a Carnosa, and I think it was published again as I'm blanking. It has like another, I think that it was published again as something else, but it's Pupa Calyx. Wow. Anyways, I'm rambling. I'm failing at lightning questions.
No, no, no.
Interesting.
I You've just like sparked a memory, because Pupa Calyx is another one that I was just like, I don't really like those, because mine was probably covered in flat mites and it didn't do much. And now I need to try it again.
Oh, yeah.
I have one you can get a cutting
maybe out. Maybe broad mites. I've noticed that the Carnosa complex is extremely prone to broad mites.
Good to know.
That's my guess for you.
Okay.
You know what? I was never about
my armchair diagnosis.
Because they always died on me, and it was probably broad mites.
It might be.
Probably.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. All right.
Next question. What is your favorite sun-stressed Hoya?
Oh, geez. I'm the worst at sun stressing.
Same.
But yeah, I'm not good at it. But I would say Affini Bertonii, the DS70 clone, the little one that I got from Dorothy and Ted that David Aww. Silverman gifted to Ted.
Hmm.
He sold it. He had it listed as his variegated thingii, but it's not. You know, there was just that issue with, like, they were going to publish it as that name, or they did, you know, Christine Burton published it under that species name, but then there was a type sheet mix-up.
Mm.
So it's not published. but it's just so beautiful, and I do have that one under lights, and it sun stresses really beautifully, and it blooms a lot. And and I've been able to share that a few times in cutting boxes and stuff. And it's just really pretty.
So my address.
And I know that's like a common Hoya.
Just kidding.
Maybe I'd save that one in the fire. Yeah. Like it's not rare, but it's got that story, and it was like a gift, you know?
Yeah.
The stories are my favorite. Mm-hmm. That seems important to you too. That's what's so special about Hoya, if you know their history. And
yeah.
And that's why I like to share things with people.
Yeah, me too. I want to keep all those stories. Yeah, I want to collect all those little stories up and hang on to them, you know, and mm-hmm. share them out there.
Okay, next up.
I know, I've told you that before.
Oh, yes, yes. Just a few more lightning questions. Next up is your most drool-worthy Hoya foliage. So the Hoya that has the most beautiful leaves, in your opinion, in your collection.
I feel like that was like probably the answer to question number one. Is this hard to do this from the car and not the sunroom? I'm looking through the windows of the sunroom, like trying to look in. And then the basement's down there too, and that's where most of them are. I almost want to say it's a very specific clone of Hoya Lyai.
Ooh.
You've seen it probably. It's the one that April grows. It's there's several clones of it. It's like the type specimen. And it's got very, very dark leaves that are very rich and long and have splash on them and
has the pupescent underside.
They're just really rich and they are very, always very pubescent.
Yeah, okay, I know pubescent. The one that you're referring to.
It's pubescent everywhere, really. It's quite pubescent species. It's almost kind of her suit. I'll send you a picture. Yeah, it's beautiful. I have it on my Instagram too, because I'm really quite in love with it.
I got one from April, and it's probably one of my favorites.
Is that the one you gave me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I'm growing so well?
Yes.
That you'll cut for me soon?
It's slow. It's a slow grower. I mean, it's going faster for me now, but it's a slower grower than any of the others in that species, I think.
Okay.
Mm. Or, well, not that much else is in that species anymore.
All right. Well, just to make you ponder a little harder, what is the Hoya with your favorite flower in your collection right now?
Oh, yeah, no question. That would be Vestigii.
Oh, we just got one.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. It's not just, it's, I, was like, could I reasonably do this from my grow tent just so I could smell that for like an hour?
Oh, man. Oh my goodness.
And so Mark Randall is, you know, particularly into studying the fragrances of Hoyas.
Oh.
You guys might have seen some of his initial research on that. He's doing some collecting of information on the Stemma Journal group. And I wanted to just teleport him here when that first bloomed, the second night in particular, because I have it in my grow tent, in my larger tent, and you just open the door and it's like just a wall of the best jasmine tea. Just really just immersing you, you know, it's really good. And then it's just really gorgeous too. Yeah.
Yeah,
I really do too. I cut the mesh that it was growing on so that I could get it down and like photograph it. It's a really good one.
Yeah, I'm curious. Like, I know I've seen Mark make posts about that, and I also want him to talk about the people who can't smell, because so I have Hushgaliana that's flowering, and literally everyone in my life, these two girls, my partner, a friend who just came to visit, they all can smell it. And I literally can smell nothing. I smell nothing. And they're all like, oh, that's so strong. And I my nose is just like, nope, we're not going to smell this one. Mm-hmm. It's so weird.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Scent is a really unusual thing. You know, it's very personal, and everyone's neurology is different, and sense of smell is different. You know, wild.
Adam also has.
But
a
you smell some Hoyas, right?
Yeah, I do. I smell some. I smell most, but that one, and then the species of Affinity Burtonae, which everyone complains about smelling awful. I don't smell anything when that one blooms. Nothing.
Okay.
Weird.
Yeah, so it seems like, and that one has a very similar, that's also an Acanthus Stemma. So with a very similar, you know, in my opinion, the fragrance profile, which, what is the color Hushgaliana you said was blooming?
Well, the flower's pink. It's an outer variegated.
Okay. It's an outer variegated pink. Okay. Yep. So, you know, I think those are very similar fragrance profiles. Anyways, I could go on interviewing you about this, and it's your interview, but let's chat about that. That's interesting, and I think Mark would be interested.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the girls made me put it up next to my Hoya compacta that was also flowering, because they were like, ooh, butterscotch and chocolate. And so I put them next to each other and had them sniff it, and they were all like, ooh, that's so gross.
It made me nauseous.
It's not good.
That's a weird combination.
Yeah.
In my mind, I thought it would be, you know, a good combination, but it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. No, because it's like, it's, I think the, I was just talking to Mark about this too, that the cultivated Carnosa, like the, not the heirloom Carnosa, but the Hoya Carnosa compacta, and like Carnosa exotica, and the reverted Carnosas all seem to have that like cheap Easter chocolate kind of profile. Mm-hmm. And then the heirloom Carnosa has that like really rich floral kind of smell. And so it's just a totally different profile range. So I can see how that would be a little kind of little icky next to butterscotch, which is, I think, sort of, I'm not exactly how Acanthus Stemma smells to me, but I definitely see it in that range.
Wow. It's, I have something to dive into.
That's like a good way to summarize it.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, along the lines of that, our next lightning question is, what is the stinkiest Hoya flower in your collection? The one that you just do not care to smell?
The stinkiest. I like smells. I like all these weird smells. And I've always enjoyed it. I've always thought it was fun. And like, there's like, to me, there's like taxonomic relevancy to it. And it's part of the fun, weird mystery. So even when it's kind of like a weird, gross smell, I'm kind of like, oh, what does that mean? so I'm not necessarily going to like take it to bed with me and be like, I want to have this like near me. This is peaceful. But I enjoy like that part of it. It's interesting, you know, there's mm-hmm. all these like, mm-hmm. there's none that I don't like or think are gross. But I don't want to like wear the fragrance of Mathilde or of Serpens. Those are, yeah, to me, those are fragrances that are like very complex and very interesting mm-hmm. and also smell like a combination of specific, unique things.
I also can't smell a Mathilde.
I don't want to wear. Really?
Slight hint, but no. And people do complain about that one too.
Smells like it's mama and it's papa.
Yeah. Mine's literally blooming all over. And when they open, I there's at least 7 peduncles that open at one, like all times when they bloom, and I can't smell anything. So I guess that's good.
That's an interesting thing. Do you have this, this is just a personal question, but do you experience that with like food and things as well then?
You know, I don't know.
There's foods that you can't smell?
Not that I really have taken note of it. Maybe I'll just make, you know, maybe
start
I'll
smelling everything. Start,
like, I mean, obviously I hate the smell of blue cheese, but.
Okay.
But I don't know if there's like anything that I don't smell.
Like a curry restaurant or like, you know, like you smell strong garlic and stuff like that, you notice it?
Yeah. Well, I don't go to a curry restaurant because I don't like curry.
Okay. Okay.
But he also can't eat spicy. He's a white boy.
But I'm gonna keep note of that to try to find a correlation there of like things.
Because it seems like you're something with your sense of smell.
I'm broken. Okay.
All right.
No.
Last flower question. What is the Hoya that flowers the most for you in your collection right now?
Oh boy, there's you know, the ones that don't stop for anybody probably, right? The numbered DS70 pretty much doesn't shut off. It used to be the same with it's the unnumbered Affini Bertonii, both clones, the long leaf and the round that lost its number. Or never had one, but then I gave them cold damage when the power went out for 5 days.
Ooh.
They are recovering, though. They are recovering. I removed the damaged leaves. They're bouncing back, and I've got peduncles, so they're going to be all right. Yeah, we'll be back in business. Sunrise, you know, I've got a giant, just an absolutely giant sunrise, and that is constantly in bloom, and it leaves a mess all over the place. you know, like they're just everywhere dead flowers. That's how I should be able to tell who's in bloom, is just from the dead flowers. Like, you know, you walk in and you're like, what is this smell? And it's like a weird combination, usually of Lacanosa and Acanthostemmas fighting with one another, with some Carnosa mixed in. And Hoya Carnosa Compacta should be coming back into bloom anytime now.
Ooh.
Just kind of lazy about it.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is not a constant flower her, but I'm very excited that Hoya Molliski is coming into bloom, budding up. And so that's going to be very exciting. And there should be some cool things happening with that.
Has that one bloomed for you?
April's hybrid. It has not. She sent it to me with buds on, which dropped in transit despite the overnight shipment. It was just the luck of the draw. And so it's going to be perfect and beautiful. And we will share it widely.
Ah, that's exciting. So
very excited to see it. Yes.
Okay. We've reached the last lightning question. And this one doesn't necessarily have to be one that's in your collection. I'm going to give you a pass on that. But what, in your opinion, do you feel like on the market is the most underrated Hoya?
Oh man, I struggle with this term. Because I know what you mean. But I think that like we hear underrated and I think that like,
in different circles,
it's almost like a price thing or something. Like you know what I mean? Like for example, like Pupa Calyx is the most loved Hoya in the Philippines. I think that probably, like, if we actually did a real poll, like, Carnosa would be, like, the most loved or second most loved Hoya, like, around the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of our, like, some of the Hoyas we maybe think are underrated are, like, kind of not. They're maybe just cheap because they're available. Mm-hmm. And we just clamor for what is new. I think we clamor for new stuff.
Oh, wholeheartedly. So but I do want to clarify that. I was not thinking price because I was thinking, like...
No, I know you're not. Yeah. I know. I just don't really know what underrated is. I don't know how to answer it right. Because I see that word and people say it, like, they'll see a beautiful Hoya and they'll be like, I think this is so underrated. And I'm kind of like... Is it? What does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, what is underrated? Like, because I think it's popular, but people just don't necessarily demand it because they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%.
So, like, what I will say is I think that, like, so I did, like, a top 10 list for the Hoya Telegraphin. And I put, like, my top 10 favorite Hoyas on there, right? And they're all Hoyas that everyone can get, except for one that was very expensive. But it's still a Carnosa. Mm. It's a pricey one. I think that, like, everybody out there should have... I've talked, like, 10 times about the Affini Betonii. Right, I think that absolutely everyone out there should grow that Hoya.
Mm.
Don't put it next to your windows and let it get cold if your power's going to drop. I think that's the maybe just the best, most gorgeous Hoya. Don't call it the species Bertonii; it's a different Hoya, not the same thing. It might be the same someday, but. As of now, they're compared against one another in the publication. And so they can't be the same thing. But yeah, that would be it, I think, like, as far as what you mean. Like, mm-hmm. a Hoya that kind of, like, no one necessarily thinks is cool, but is seriously cool because look at photos of it on Instagram and tell me you don't want, like, that Hoya, like, filling up your... windows.
Definitely underappreciated.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I can't tell. I mean, and I think, like, or, you know, I think every time someone sees one, they're like, whoa, that's the prettiest thing. And I'm not sure which one's prettier. The long leaf, longer leaf, dark blooming form, or the shorter leaf, short round, usually numbered as DS70 if it's tracked back to David. Lighter flower one. They're both so gorgeous for different reasons. That's the one that the variegated unnamed cultivar came from. And they're both just, they're just so pretty.
Wow.
They grow like weeds. Just don't freeze them. They're way more sensitive than I realized. I literally saw them. I got everything else. I was like, this will all be fine down to 30 for a couple of days. And like, was like, these are fine. I've left them through lots of power outages and just left them. And they just were the only ones with damage. Oh, no, one other way up. But they're fine. They'll be fine.
But that was our episode with Rachel. And we just absolutely love just like getting to know you more and hearing about these Hoya that you love. But also, like, thank you for taking the time to just like go over and deep dive into this information with us, which I feel like can be pretty complicated nowadays. But hopefully it kind of solidified that information a little bit more for our listeners and definitely for us too. So thank you so much.
And it
much.
Probably wasn't even a deep dive. That was probably just the skim.
Yeah, just like the skim.
That was a skim dive.
But we
I feel like I might have just muddied it more for them.
No, not at all. But we hope to have you on again, Rachel, in the future so we can keep on talking about this topic because I think it's really important and relevant in... for our hobby and for those of us who are collecting Hoya. And we hope you enjoyed your time with us here. So thank you.
Oh, very much. I'm so glad to have gotten to speak with each of you.
And where is it that people can best find you, Rachel?
You can find me on Instagram at My Hoya Conservatory. And on Facebook, it's Rachel Collette Conroy. And you can find us at stomajournal.org and the Stoma Journal Facebook group, of course, and answering ID questions at the Hoya Identification Group and just around and about in the Facebook groups as well, of course, doing stuff.
Just doing the most.
My email is also published in the Stoma Journal as well for questions related to the articles and things of that nature.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again, Rachel, for being on our podcast. That's where you can find her. You can also find us on Instagram at let's.talkhoya. We're going to be publishing lots of stuff about this episode and pictures of some of these lightning question Hoya from Rachel. Ooh. And you can also find us individually on Instagram. I am at notdude.
I'm at thegreenplant.az.
And I'm at perritos y plants. Adios.
Annyeong.
Bye.
Au revoir.
Oh, I love
there
that.
We go. Okay. Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.